Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 39, recorded Thursday, May 18th, 2006. It's the podcast giving the voice of the traveler, more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on today's Travel Commons Podcast, looking out the front window, and our next installation of travel tech, scoring new music. Coming to you again from Southern California, this time from the Newport Beach Marriott. I stayed home last week working on the latter two-thirds of the planes, trains, and automobiles travel trifecta, taking the train into the office a day or two and then driving out to clients out in the western parts of Chicago the rest of the week. I don't know, O'Hare and I need a break from one another about every 4 to 6 weeks. I've talked about that on past Travel Commons podcasts. And so with that pause to recharge my travel patience, I'm back on the West Coast Triangle this week, O'Hare to San Francisco. And then this time I drove down to San Jose to pick up a cheaper flight to John Wayne Orange County Santa Ana Airport. And now it's Santa Ana to O'Hare this morning. Next week, though, I'm a little simpler, just doing a straight run to Orange County and then trying to get back home before all hell breaks loose for the Memorial Day weekend. I got to tell you, booking this week's flight out here to California was tough and really a proof point for how the airlines are really just driving up seat occupancy. Because some meetings were late in getting scheduled and sort of pinned down, I couldn't make my flight reservations until late last week. My first meeting in San Francisco wasn't until Monday afternoon, so I was looking at 9 a.m. departures. Figured I'd give myself the opportunity to wake up at a reasonable time Monday morning, especially since we were having my wife's family over for Mother's Day dinner. And that's always a multi-wine bottle event. Anyhow, all I could find was a 6:45 a.m. United flight into San Francisco and a 9 a.m. American flight into San Jose. Well, you know, since my meeting was in the mid-bay, so to speak, San Jose was fine. However, before I could book the flight, a couple of calls came in and I was pulled away to some other things. And when I got back to it later that night at home, both flights were gone, and the earliest flight now showing were 1 p.m. flights into San Francisco and San Jose. And I'll tell you, each of those was getting in way too late for my afternoon meeting. I started to sweat just a little bit, flying out Sunday night, cutting out early from Mother's Day dinner and leaving my wife with the cleanup. That was going to require a very large withdrawal from the favor bank and possibly bounce for insufficient funds. So I started checking around pretty quick. Now, one thing to realize is that there isn't perfect inventory visibility across all travel distribution channels. Airlines and hotels often sell inventory, blocks of seats or beds, to channels like Orbitz or Expedia, and that inventory is no longer available on the airline's website. I mean, they've sold it. What do they care? But it still could be available unsold in the channel. So I go to Orbitz, which I like because of its user interface. I can quickly enter the cities and dates, and then all the available fares and airlines pop up on a nice matrix. And, you know, being a consultant, I love matrices. So there's the American 9 a.m. to San Jose. I try to book it. No dice. The red letters telling me that flight is no longer available. I mean, what? Went away in the 45 seconds it took me to find it on the matrix and click on it? Well, quite possibly. You know, in the last Travel Commons podcast, I mentioned a USA Today article reporting that April airplane utilization was at 80%, the highest in a long time, and some would say unsustainably high. Well, I hit the back button on the browser to get back to the matrix. I didn't want to waste time having Orbitz do another search. And there was that 6:45 a.m. United flight. I grit my teeth and click on it. I get it. along with a 4:30 a.m. Alarm hit on Monday morning. You know, the one nice thing was that the fare was a discounted first-class fare. So for the same price as the coach seat on the American flight, I get a first-class flight on United. And now, United's first-class service is a bit of a mixed bag for me. Now, on one hand, I love that their meals are still served with metal utensils, save for the knife, of course, and that their coffee is served in proper coffee cups with saucers. Americans' plastic utensils and coffee mugs just don't cut it. I mean, they don't give me that first-class experience. But at least on their 757s, United has covered up the in-seat power supplies in first class, but left the in-flight phones? Now here, American hasn't beat hands down. You know, that phone is no use to me, but the in-seat power is crucial for a four-hour flight, though less so on this particular flight, when I slept three-quarters of it and almost missed breakfast. So following up, as always, some good comments posted on the website and sent into the email box. But before I get to them, I want to mention to those who haven't been by the website in the past couple of days that we have an entirely new look and feel that should make it easier to leave comments. I've moved the site from PostNuke to WordPress for an easier, more blog-like experience. Hillary Bauman of Fascination Design, a longtime Travel Commons listener, designed it for me. And I'll be moving content over from the old site sort of on a LIFO, last in, first out basis over the next few weeks as time permits. Hey, check it out and pass along any feedback. Okay, the first comment comes from the other side of the counter, this time from Doug, who works in accounting for one of the major hotel chains. In Travel Commons number 36, I talked about the growing number and cost of add-on service charges at hotels. Here's Doug's view from his side of the check-in desk. While services such as movies, internet access, safe charges, and guest laundry generate revenue for the hotel, they each virtually make no profit for the hotel. In fact, in most cases, we're just passing on the costs of the services that we are charged. If you can believe it, we pay in the tens of thousands each month to provide internet access to customers. In terms of parking charges, I agree with you and believe that they should be free in the suburban hotels. However, with many hotels' telecom revenues steadily declining since the rise of the cell phone, hotels are forced to look for other revenue streams to keep the profit margins up and keep Wall Street happy. In regards why hotels just don't raise their rates to make up the additional revenue, it is because in this day and age with Expedia, Priceline websites, where so many transient guests, which are so cost conscious, are able to easily compare between hotels across a city, hotels are constantly struggling to balance rate with occupancy to maximize RevPAR, revenue per available room. Hope this helps. You know, Doug, it absolutely does, and I really appreciate you taking the time to give us that view from inside the four walls of the hotel chain. Now, Edward Learned, I hope I got the name right there, sent a note recounting his recent experiences with Northwest Airlines. I fly on a regular basis out of Minneapolis and have for years. As a Minneapolis resident, I have long been a fan of Northwest Airlines. I have remained loyal throughout all their attempts to drive me away. All that changed in 2005 when I discovered an airline that really is trying to think out of the box. Picture this. I need to make a last-minute trip to Dallas. I make my reservation on Northwest Airlines for about $1,000 because it's a last-minute reservation. I'm silver on Northwest, but their automated seating assigns me to a middle seat despite my profile showing aisle preference. After making my reservation, I immediately go back to change to an aisle or at least a window seat. I get to the airport, fight overcrowded parking, and huge TSA lines because my silver doesn't quite get me into the accelerated line. When I board the plane, the seats are the most cramped in the industry, cloth, and badly in need of restuffing. The plane is packed, and the only person who has a chance at an upgrade to first is one Platinum Plus member. Because of the tight seating, I can no longer open my laptop and get any work done. Not only do I not get any food anymore, but they are now selling the nuts. Fortunately, coffee is free. By and large, the staff is not happy. On the bright side, I get about 1,500 miles to my credit. Now, let's make that same trip on Sun Country. I need to make a last-minute trip, but I've paid $100 plus $12 a month to join their VIP program. I go to the VIP site, book any flight with a one-day advance purchase for $39 plus 9 cents per mile. On the day of the departure, I can upgrade to first class for $50, and I get the upgrade 90% of the time. Either way, first or coach, I can be assured of a well-cared-for 737, leather seats, a friendly staff, and a hot meal. I arrive at the airport at the smaller terminal, park within 50 paces of the door, have accelerated check-in, real person, not machine, and accelerated TSA because of my VIP membership. Now, which is the budget airline again? Ed's closing question, I think, is the key one for the airline industry right now. The lines between mainline and budget airlines are going to be even more meaningless if and when Southwest starts offering seat assignments instead of the ABCQ positions. There's a news report out yesterday saying that Southwest is spending $5 million to allow the reservation systems to assign seats. After that, what's the differentiation? International routes? American didn't have many international routes until they bought Eastern's from bankruptcy court, and Delta bought theirs from Pan Am. Now, how many airlines do we have in bankruptcy now? Delta, Northwest. You know, who's gonna land in there again? How long before United ends up in there again? So could it be done again? Could somebody end up buying stuff out of routes from United or Northwest or Delta? Sure, if it's really necessary to be considered a mainline airline, do you really have to have international routes? You know, I'm not convinced it is. Finally, thanks to Ray Medina for setting up the Travel Commons group on Frapper. That's the map where people identify themselves and their locations on a world map. Click on the Frapper badge. It's on the left side of the website. We have 10 pins in the map so far. It's kind of fun to see the distribution of listeners and the pictures that some folks have posted. Ray's got his with standing next to his bicycle. Stick your own pin in if you get a chance. I'd appreciate it, and it's kind of fun to look at. Well, thanks to everyone who sends along their thoughts and stories. The email address, as always, is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com. Or now you can more easily post your comments on the new WordPress-powered website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is looking out the front window. You know, some years back in my earlier, younger, poorer days, I got a cheap flight to London by way of a charter flight to Shannon, connecting onto a BA flight over to Heathrow. And, I'll tell you, looking out the window flying into Ireland is always a treat. When you finally sort of break through the rain clouds, the ground is just a mosaic of brilliant greens, made quite honestly even more brilliant, more striking by the contrast against those gray rain clouds and against the gray brown stone walls that outline each green square that sort of delineate the fields. And after 8 hours of flying over the gray North Atlantic, it's a great sight to wake up to. So we hit the ground, and Shannon we had to clear customs and then recheck our luggage with British Airways. And two women from the charter flight were in front of me at the BA counter. The guy was checking them in, tagged their bags, released the luggage onto the conveyor belt to send them on. And just as the luggage hit the conveyor and started just sort of moving it down along the wall, one of the women noticed that their luggage was tagged to the wrong airport. It was going to Heathrow instead of to where they were going, Gatwick. They yelled at the agent, pointed to the luggage just as it sort of disappeared from view through those little plastic flappers and into the hole in the wall. "Ah, no problem," the agent said. "It'll go over on to the Heathrow flight, and BA will hold it there. It'll wait there for him." The women were a bit uncertain about this, but eventually gave up and trundled off to their gate. I checked in next, and you can bet I gave that luggage tag a good look before he released it onto the conveyor. Well, you probably can guess where this is going. We board the flight, the paperwork doesn't match. We have more luggage than passengers. So they pull all the luggage back out of the plane, spread it out onto the tarmac, deplane all of us, and have us physically identify our luggage. So I'm going around going, "Yep, that's my backpack. Yep, that's. Back onto the plane, ready to go. I look out the window and I see the unclaimed bag still sitting on the tarmac. It takes me a minute, but it hits me. It's the women's luggage, the bags the clerk mistagged. I hit the call button and sort of quickly relate the story to the purser. Well, the engines have started and the plane's already starting to taxi. Not a lot he can do. He thanks me and goes back to his pre-flight check-in list. But after the meal, the purser comes back to me. After the meal, boy, can you tell this story's a few years old? After the meal, the purser comes back to me and asks if I wouldn't mind coming up to the cockpit and tell my story to the captain. Sure, why not? He escorts me into the cockpit, and I kneel behind the console between the captain and the co-pilot. Again, obviously, this is a pre-9/11 story. So I started my story and then restarted it and found I was having a really hard time concentrating. This was the first time that I had looked out the front window of an airplane. And the sensory difference pulled me up completely short. We spend so much time in the plane cabin looking out those little windows. And they are. They're little and they're framed by the white plastic of the plane interior. And so staring out a little portal. But here in the front, the plane was completely open across almost your full field of view. And then there's also the difference on how things move. In the cabin, you're looking out the side of the plane, things pass by. You can kind of see things, they sort of move past you. Looking out the front of the window, things are coming straight at you. And in this case, it was the ground, since we were on approach to Heathrow. The ground was coming up fast, and that was accentuated by the ticking of the altimeter dial. Tick, as we ascended down through as we descended down through the hundreds of feet. I finally got my story out by staring at the throttle handle so I could focus and get this thing out. The captain thanked me for my story and sort of shook his head at the agent's stupidity, and then got back to the task of landing the plane. I backed out of the cockpit, quite honestly, still a bit mesmerized by the view in front of me, especially of the ground coming up. Walking off the plane, after we landed and deplaning, walking off the plane, the purser thanked me for coming forward and gave me a pillowcase full of champagne splits and really sort of nice French champagne splits. I thanked him for the I thanked him for the champagne, and I thanked him for the view. And about a week later, I drank those splits sitting on the edge of a cliff in Cornwall, so that the only thing in my field of vision was sky. second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is our latest addition to our Travel Tech series, this one about scoring new music. Traveling involves a lot of time staring ahead and waiting. The security line, getting on the plane, getting off the plane, standing in the Starbucks line, and yesterday, waiting for my name to appear on the Hertz Gold board at Orange County Airport, which honestly, that place has got to be the slowest rental car desk in the U.S. Well, you know, these are usually good times to run the BlackBerry, but I've been trying to wean myself off of chronic BlackBerrying. Oh, I'm trying to say that three times fast. Trying to wean myself off of chronic BlackBerrying lately. I've noticed, I've noticed that the more emails I send, the more I receive, and in an effort to regain at least a small bit of control over my life, I'm trying to see if this phenomenon is reversible. If I send fewer emails, will I receive less? So what to do with my staring ahead time? You know, I could always listen to more podcasts, but there is a limit even to that. Instead, I've been using the time to work through a huge grab bag of music. The South by Southwest Music Showcase is over 2 gig of MP3s from bands that perform at Austin South by Southwest Festival in the spring. You know, I started by downloading the 2005 showcase. It's a BitTorrent download, but the South by Southwest site has a beginner's guide and a link to a BitTorrent client. The download was also amazingly fast, over 100 kilobits per second over my DSL line because of all the open torrents out there. You're not just pulling it off of one site, you're pulling it off of 100 sites. South by Southwest is a pretty eclectic event. Indeed, they're proud of their eclecticism. And the music download is very reflective of that. There's every genre of music, punk, country, country punk, electronic, alternative, hip-hop, you name it. And, you know, as with any grab bag, you're not going to like most of the stuff in there. But if you take the time to sift through it, you'll find some nuggets of gold. And all you need is time, such as the aforementioned staring ahead time. So I pulled the 2005 showcase into iTunes, pulled it over into its own playlist, and have been sort of screening songs whenever I found myself just waiting. And you know, it's not like you got to listen to the whole song. I've usually got a pretty good read in sort of the first 30 seconds. And using the iPod rating system on the click wheel, I score each song, you know, 1 to 5 stars, keeping anything 3 and above. I chucked a lot of songs, but actually ended up keeping over 100 songs. That's 100 songs, artists I'd never heard from, added them into my usual iPod rotation. So I'm now working my way through the 06 download. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. They've split it over 2 files this year. The first file has 713 songs. The second, 229. Over 900 songs to screen. Well, given how full the planes are now in the spring, and we're just in the spring, I'm guessing that I'm going to have a whole bunch of staring ahead time once the summer travel season starts. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 39. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. And if you really like it, tell a couple of your friends about it. The bridge music on today's show is from the IODA PromoNet. That's a new source of pod-safe music from the Independent Online Distribution Alliance. Songs La Tra by Omar Sosa, All Around by Gel, and Various Stages by Great Lake Swimmers. Check the show notes for the artist details. The website is promonet.iodaalliance.com. The next show will be the 1 year anniversary, sort of greatest hits show. So stay tuned. Thanks for everybody who's passed along any recommendations. And if you have some, pass them along. Recommendations, story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in emails, audio files, or post comments on the website. Take care, And until the anniversary show, safe travels. Bye now.